biggest controversy.
Oh,
in
my God, dude.
The province,
stop
right?
It.
Quebec. Everyone's dude, freaking out.
No, you got to just think about this for a second, guys. Could you imagine? Like, I can't imagine. Noodles is like the voice of reason. If I sent out a tweet, like we were in Montreal or something, and I said, Celine Dion is a traitor. And I never want to speak of her ever again in my life. Like, Noodles calls me within 3 minutes and says, can you stop it?
Well, are they
like, why
that?
Is a grown-ass adult care? Like, somebody photoshopped a picture in Vegas of her face with a hockey helmet on, and people are calling her a traitor?
Well,
I saw that.
But, I mean, I didn't realize. I saw it trending on Twitter. I didn't realize, and then there was a statement from her, like, camp going, that was, like, photoshopped. But, like, was it like, a wildfire in Montreal? Like, were there people actually, like, that upset over it?
I can't imagine there really were. I think anyone that's even remotely sensible, why would you care? Wow. You know, the game's on that night. The Habs won. Who cares about a picture of Celine Dion on the big screen in a building you're not in? Right. I understand her history. You know, she's maybe the most famous Canadian artist of all time. Forget French-Canadian or, right. You know, from Quebec. We're talking a monster and someone that the whole country, I think, can relate to. And obviously people are very – they appreciate her talents and what she's represented throughout her career and her life in Quebec. But the fact that someone would write – and this is clickbait. That's what it was. It was clickbait. As I've been saying for quite some time, the front page of a paper was the original clickbait. You know, right. Now we think of it as a link to a website or a tweet or an Instagram post or whatever. You had to get the attention of people with that headline and get people to read it. Okay, Celine Dion's a traitor. Let's see what's up. It was so clear she had nothing to do with it. Even looking at it that night, I'm like, that doesn't even look like a real picture. Why would she agree to do that? Like, and furthermore, if she did agree to do it, how much money would she have to be paid? Because she doesn't do anything unless she's being compensated, nor should she.
My understanding is she had that residency in Vegas. It was like $25 to $50 million a year she was making. It was
absolutely
like a 10-year deal.
Be. Yeah, for sure it would be.
So technically Vegas is her second home. That's the first thing I thought. I'm like, she lives in Vegas or like resides there quite a bit anyway. So maybe Vegas is her second team or is maybe her new love type of thing. I didn't think it was that big of a deal until I saw, you know, as we call it, the fake outrage or the outrage. I just kind of thought it was
incredible.
Like, you know, but that being said, hey, listen, we're in Toronto. When we see Drake, you know, doing what Drake does with a different jersey on, I think he's pandering to his fans, pandering to the crowd. Same with Bieber. Bieber's got a jersey on from every different.
Right. It
know,
happens here.
Team.
It happens here.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess it's not something I can relate to because I don't have that much of a connection to Celine Dion or the Habs for that matter.
Right.
And I didn't think much of it. It feels like something where you're conjuring up some sort of us against the world. You know, maybe that was consistent with what the Habs have been doing on this whole run, that they've been an underdog to the point where Celine Dion, who you would assume is, you know, the biggest Montreal Canadian fan, although maybe she grew up a Nordique fan. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she even is rooting for Vegas. And maybe Bill Foley, the owner in Vegas, just a step too far, right? You're getting a little bit carried away. And maybe is kind of a major league theme, you know, Celine Dion representing the owner and Lou Brown is Luke Richardson and they're finding a way in Montreal and in the dressing room to find a way to get fired up. You know,
Hayes,
the idea of
the
Celine Dion turning on them.
What's the Toronto version, Hayes, for you as a grown-ass man with a job and like a family and stuff to worry about? What is the Toronto equivalent for you to say, I'm done with that guy?
I honestly can't think of one that would ever allow me to be in that spot if my team was up 3-2 in the semifinals.
That
you know what I mean?
Exactly right.
Could you imagine how happy you should be right now? If you were a Montreal Canadian fan, nothing could possibly throw you out of rhythm.
Imagine the breakfast chat. One went away from Stanley Cup final. Screw that. Celine Dion's a traitor.
Right. I don't even want to watch the game tonight because yeah. Celine is rooting for the Vegas Golden Knights. So
taking
if she's
calls.
Doing that, then I refuse to watch. boycotting because of Celine Dion.
Outrageous. Well, outrageous.
I thought it was outrageous, too. I just don't know how far it's gone. Because you're right. Like, I'm sure they're excited in Montreal. I woke up with this, like, hey, don't get too excited. Because Vegas could rattle off two here, and they could be curtains by Saturday, too. So you got to... You got to bring the heat tonight because we saw what happened last night. I think to a man, we were like, you know what? I think Tampa's going to take care of business. They're a seasoned team. And you know what the Islanders did? What's that in rounders? They hang around. What was it?
Just
they were,
hanging around.
They were hanging
KGB.
KGB just hanging around. They battled back in the game. And you know, is it egregious? I don't know. Was it that egregious of a turnover? It was a good play by Beauvillier.
I thought it was a horrendous turnover.
You thought so?
You don't think that was one of the worst turnovers you've ever seen in Stanley Cup playoff history? I thought it was awful last night.
Eric Staal's was worse the other day, personally. Eric Staal's right to, was that Wah from behind the net in Montreal?
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
It was like a chunky little salsa pass that Beauvillier caught it with his blade in midair, but it's still egregious.
There was a bad turnover.
It's a bad turnover, don't get me wrong.
The pizza delivery man himself in junior.
That's true.
This is where I'm the expert. I'm telling you, it was awful.
Okay, well,
that was my play.
Believe me, it was a bad turnover, but I thought it was a good read through the middle. As you're seeing, a lot of teams are breaking out through the middle. So I thought Staal's was way more egregious. Do you even saw the reaction to when Staal just hunched over afterwards? Like, I just handed them one here. Like,
yeah, that one was when he was behind the net, right?
And he
was trying to – he made a backhanded pass. He was in a – that was an awful turnover, too. I mean, there's no –
right. But in overtime, you're right. In game six in overtime, this one's a little tougher. But, you know, the Islanders, they hung around and battled back. And then now you've got a game seven. So that's why, you know, tonight is pivotal, certainly. But I wouldn't be putting the cart before the horse here. With the crazy things we've seen in this playoffs, like, anything can happen right now.
Oh, I'm not in a position to say anything one way or the other. In terms of trying to make a prediction, it's been very, very difficult. And that's what you want. That means they've been close games, great games, unpredictable series. One has already gone seven. I will say, I believe all three of us, well, at least Noodles and I at the beginning of the series, thought there was a good chance these were going to go, you know, six or go seven.
Yeah.
And that's where they are now on the one side of it. And I would love to see that tonight. You know, with all due respect to people in Montreal, I'm in it for a game seven. I would prefer that just simply for content and for entertainment purposes.
Sure.
I would love to see a game seven. I'm curious because it sounds and looks like Leonard's going to start tonight.
Right.
I don't know what Peter DeBoer's doing here. Like, I can't get a read on this guy in terms of going Leonard, Fleury, Leonard. We didn't talk about Fleury at all yesterday or very little.
What does Leonard have to do with the team scoring zero goals?
No, exactly. But what does Fleury have to do with the team scoring zero goals? I guess is my point. It has not been the goaltending that has put them in this spot. Fleury, he didn't make any miraculous stops the other night. I didn't think he was horrible. They can't score. Their power play's a mess. It just seems weird that you're in a spot like this where you're going Leonard, Fleury, Leonard.
Well,
unless he feels like Fleury at the Bell Center against Montreal is too much.
Well, the only thing I could think of personally is that it's just a different look, and sometimes teams respond differently to a goaltender. Like, I've never been in a situation where I was one of the goalies and it was a coin flip. I was the backup, so it was like you either get Luongo or you get McLennan. You get Kiprusoff, you get McLennan. Like, you know, maybe in Minnesota, but I thought Fernandez was a great goalie. Point being is when you – like, this is almost a coin flip as far as maybe confidence in the room because Fleury's had a great season, but Leonard's a starter too. So it might just be, hey, we're going to give Montreal a different look because this guy's – you know, 6'4", 250 in the net. Like, you look up, you don't see much net with Leonard. Fleury's, I think, is a better goalie personally, but it doesn't mean that Leonard can't deliver. And he delivered in a tough scenario in game four two games ago.
So, yeah, he's done it before, and as, you know, we've pointed out, that's not really their concern. Their concern has got to be Stone, Pacioretty, Marchessault. William Karlsson has been so unimpressive.
Dude, like, him and Riley Smith, usually they're so good, that line. The whole line, you throw Marchessault right in there with them. It's not like he's stuck out and done a little bit more
hasn't.
Than the whole line. For their standards, the Misfit line, they're dynamic, they're awesome. They usually are all over the ice creating. They're terrible. They're flat out terrible.
They've been terrible. Yeah, they've been terrible. They've been a complete non-factor. And you got to get some life out of someone up front tonight if you're Peter DeBoer on the Vegas Golden Knights. And if you're Montreal, you're just trying to establish the same game plan you've been playing.
Play the same way.
Just go out there and
forget about the four lines. I know Vegas, and I know Pete DeBoer knows what he's doing. He's a friend of the show and one of our favorites.
Yeah, we love him.
But you're looking to get a line and a half going or two lines tonight. Forget about the four lines. You don't have time to get four lines and create moment. Try to get six guys like that are ready to go, because you're out of time. So try something. You're not going to get four lines going out of that nonsense. Try to get six guys going if you can. Peter Laviolette's recipe was very simple. If it wasn't going, he'd be like, look, man, 10 minutes of the first period, I'm going to see who's interested in this. And after that, I got to make a call on you. So have at it the first 10 minutes, because after that, I cannot keep putting you on the ice if you're doing squat.
And here's the one thing I thought about this morning, and I wanted to bring this up. I know a lot's been made about the reffing, and we'll get into that. But two nights ago, the reffing wasn't a problem in Vegas. I thought they reffed a really good game. I thought Montreal just played brilliantly. Yep. And the one thing that everyone focuses on, and I see agents tweeting out and superfan media members all around going, the reffing and McDavid didn't draw this. And how about these guys in the playoffs? And I'll give example for Montreal. We talk about Philip Deneau has zero goals. I think he's been unbelievable. Because you know what he's done? Every time he's gone over the boards, he's made it his personal mission to make life miserable for a top player on the other side. So whether that was Matthews, whether that was, Shifley or Dubois or whatever, and now in this series, if it's Stone or if it's, Marchessault or somebody, that guy's doing a job. And
his contract's going to be interesting, how you equate that to a value.
I don't know. Great player, right.
that doesn't put up points.
But here's the thing. And the only reason I can, tie it closer to home is when I played in Minnesota, I sat with Jacques Lemaire one time and he said that he told me, he's like, Wes Walls is a 50-goal man. And I was like, I play with Walsy and Junior. He's not a 50-goal guy. And he said, no, he's a 20-goal scorer that will prevent 30. And he said, that's the difference. This guy will put in a little bit of offense, but he's like, he, in all critical times, will be on the ice to make sure that the best players don't got their mojo. And I think that's where Montreal, and Luke Richardson said it, I believe, yesterday. He's like, we are back-checking like maniacs. We are, they're diving everywhere. They're blocking shots. That's playoff hockey. You don't see these amount of block shots and the desperation plays in the neutral zone like you see in the playoffs. And I think teams deserve credit for that because that's hard work and determination.
It is. You got to be dedicated to it. And to do it night in, night out is difficult. Now, it becomes easier when you have the success, right? Mm-hmm. That's why, really, you want to give Montreal credit. This series in particular, this has been their best five games, collectively against a very good Vegas team. They've been so impressive, and they were very, very impressive a couple of nights ago. But down 3-1 to Toronto, and knowing the way we're going to get back in is we have to stick to the plan and grind, and they did it, is remarkably impressive in retrospect because it was going to be tough, right? It's an uphill battle, and we got to grind these guys into the ground, and we got to battle, and we got to skate, and we got to win battles, and they did it, and it paid off for them.
Down the stretch, Hayes, they still didn't really have an identity. They were having this identity crisis. They were like, we got some guys that can score goals, but they were terrible in the regular season, man. But it clicked in, and they said, this is what we got to do to have success. And it's like they all bought in at the exact same moment, and their benefit from me now. They didn't kind of know who they were or what to do or how to zone in on what specifically how they were going to win. But I'll tell you what, man, they figured it out, and they all know what the hell's going on now.
They do, and as Ray said yesterday, and it's a good point, every guy in the roster is playing within 5% of the best hockey they can play. You know, based on who they are now. Corey Perry 10 years ago, Eric Staal 10 years ago. But based on who they are today, this is as good as it gets. Did you see Richardson's comment today about the big four defensemen and how it's like going up against four Chris Prongers? And I had to go hear the clip because I'm like, tell me you didn't just jinx yourself and pretend as if Joel Edmondson is Chris Pronger. But what he meant by it was the size and the meanness and, grinding for every single inch. And that is evident. I mean, and it's evident in New York, right, with the Islanders. You look at that Scott Mayfield. He's taking a lot of heat today, and we can get into that right now. But regardless of how you feel about it, if you're the New York Islanders and Barry Trotz, you love that that guy's on your team because he's a monster. He's mean. He scored a big goal. Their whole defense corps is they're just monster, monster, monster. Nick Leddy, monster, monster. Like, it's just – well, and that's what they did last night.
That was a two-minute penalty.
On Kucherov?
It was a missed cross-check. That's it. Like, I don't know what else, like
– an egregious miss, Jamie. 2 minutes, but it's an egregious miss. It's like it's right in front of the ref. It's like, come on, man.
And Chris Lee, that's the same guy, right? The same guy that was watching the pop in the face from McNabb to Suzuki the other day. I get it. It's a missed call. But, like – The premise that, like, Joel Edmondson, I'll get back to the Habs, like, that he's not a skilled defenseman, he's really good at playing defense. I played with Robin Regier. Robin Regier was a monster, 6'3", 6'4". Hayes, you met him. Didn't we go out for drinks one night or something?
Yeah, monster.
Like, big guy, but you know what he took pride in? Is making sure the puck wasn't in his net. And that's what, like, it's all right to be skilled within your own craft. Just because you don't score doesn't mean you're skilled. And it bothers me to see, you know, people taking shots. With Joel Edmondson, they act like he's an ankle skater out there. He's a hell of a player for what he is.
He does exactly what he is supposed to do. And he never steps out of his comfort zone. He's not going to try to dangle at the blue line or, you know, throw saucer passes up the middle. He does exactly what he's supposed to do. And there's a lot of value that comes with that. I think in terms of the Mayfield Kucherov stuff last night, he got Stamkos too late. Like, these are cross checks that are going uncalled for whatever reason. And, you know, they're battles. I really didn't like the Kucherov one last night. Like, that, the puck wasn't close. He blatantly took a liberty on him. He saw the number. He said, I can get this guy. And he buried him.
Like, just in any league, I don't understand. Kucherov had the puck, doesn't have the puck. Like, what the hell are you, like, what are
well, you
like,
just call
it? Yeah, it's just, it's cross-checking. It's like so obvious. Forget about who the player is. It's cross-checking any day, every day, so call it.
Yeah.
And this guy's putting himself under the gun, man. Holy.
Like, at least Stamkos one was a little bit unlucky because he hit his head off the sideboard and he was, that one is a battle at the board. That happens.
Right. He was battling with his nostril hairs touching the edge of the board.
Right.
I don't know if that's necessary.
That one's tough. I mean, that's on Stamkos to an extent.
Yes.
But the Kucherov one, the puck's gone. Like, that's just a that's Mayfield.
That's an extra.
That's him saying, I can get this guy, and he got him. And that's been happening in this sport for a long, long time, and it will continue to. But we don't know the extent of his injury. Like, he may have – what if he broke a rib last night?
Well, he might have. It looked to me like he – if that was the problem. Because, right, it was in a sweet spot. And, you know, I believe the defenseman used to call it a complimentary. Like, here, take this with you as you leave type of thing. Here's a complimentary extra as you skate away. And that's what it was. It looked like a complimentary, and it looked like it hit a sweet spot. Like, a non-padded type of, like, lower rib. And then he goes to – it seemed like he – nothing on Barzal, and he was like, check, please.
You could tell he was done.
Hopefully they shut him down. Hopefully they shut him down for precaution, because you don't want him to be missing in a game seven. Like, that's a
no, of course not. But if you're the Islanders, you do.
Sure,
you know, like, they're not going to admit that publicly, and they'll sportsmanlike, they'll say, we hope everyone's okay. But last night, that is what can happen in this sport, where a guy like Mayfield has the impact that he had last night, because he scored a goal. That was a beautiful shot. Like, I don't think he does that again if he has that shot 100 times. I think 99 out of 100 he misses that shot, but he scored last night. But, you know, he was playing big, playing tough, taking liberties on star players, and won the battle, and the team won the game.
Right.
And he's not going to apologize for it.
Well,
you know,
to see people like, star players, hey, you're out there. Go and fight for your own ice. Like, this is the thing that bothers me is, like, should star players wear a different color jersey then, so that they know that they're off limits? Like, you know, that's what, if you're out there, you're fair game for anybody. Now, that being said, call within the rules, but every call, you know, if that's
I think people, Jamie, with that narrative, they're like, if this game, like any other of the sports, is about like protecting the quarterback in football because those are the guys that make things happen, if we're going to have rules, like let these guys, like let Kucherov skate away there and not cross-check them. Like the big thing was, like Connor McDavid, Ray talked about it, drew three penalties. Like, come on, that's not possible.
Well, here's
like, let
the
star players do their thing. This isn't only about them. But it's basically they're the big part of it, where they got they sell the game. Them making plays sells
the
game.
You're right, but you know why Connor only drew three penalties? There was no room in the neutral zone for him to get going. Like you're allowed to check in this game and stick check.
Oh, sure. Like, I agree with it. Like, it's fun to watch, I find, but it's the other nonsense where people are like Crosby in the first round, he skated in front of the net, and somebody on the Islanders, probably that Mayfield character, cross-checked him behind on the neck, and he just went down, and there was no penalty. I'm like, how the hell do you not call that? Like, call it.
Yeah. Well, and this is the conundrum that they've had forever and will continue to have for a long time, because the rule book, you can't change the rules of the whole game for the star players. You can't have a superstar clause. You can in the NFL because a quarterback is literally a different position than everyone else and is playing literally a different game than everyone else on the field. And it's a totally different sport. But you look at it last night, it's a perfect example. Mayfield, Kucherov, if you're in the league office of the National Hockey League, you're losing your mind. It's Scott Mayfield is playing and scoring, and Nikita Kucherov is hurt because of a greasy cross-check. Now, again, I don't know how you change that other than giving it a two-minute call, maybe a five, maybe, but I don't know. That's the sport. Like, that's just the game, and that's the gamble you take when anyone gets on the ice, which is what you're saying, Noodles. You play the game, things can happen. But if you're the Islanders, you love it. If you're the Islanders, you're never going to apologize for it. But if you're the league, so you're completely objective here, you're like, I can't believe Scott Mayfield just knocked out Nikita Kucherov with a greasy cross-check. Like, that doesn't help us at all. Doesn't help any TV partner, radio partner, marketing department, endorsements, nothing.
Well, people,
and again, there's nothing you can do about it necessarily.
Mayfield's got a jersey on too. Like, that's the thing. Like, you're right. Like, so what
just
people
stars
are saying is like
it.
Mayfield is a lesser person or player than
in terms of marketing, absolutely he is.
But it's not even close,
Noodles.
People
and you
aren't
know
turning
that.
The TV off, going, you know what, Scott Mayfield just scored. Can't watch that anymore.
That's
you know
not
what?
The point.
Like you can't have the chicken or the egg. Like it's the chicken or the egg. This is you can't bubble wrap. You mentioned it in the NFL. That's one position. Goaltenders are being protected in hockey. Quarterback. Yeah. What if that's Victor Hedman last night? He's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Cizikas takes a liberty on Hedman. Like, we're not talking about this if that was Blake Coleman cross-checked last night. Or
now,
Ross Colton, who got hurt last night.
Absolutely not. But that's the whole point. Kucherov is not Coleman, right? Like, if we're being honest here in terms of marketing, and I think we're all aware of what we're talking about
we're
here.
We're reasonable about it, yes.
Yes, Kucherov clearly is a bigger draw and a bigger sell and a guy you want to see in Game 7 more than Blake Coleman or Scott Mayfield. Like, that's just the truth.
But,
you know, it's I don't know how you do anything about it if you're the league. It's the nature of the sport,
it always has been. Call the two-minute cross-check. That's what
you can, but he's still hurt. You know what I mean? Like he's still out for Game 7 potentially. If he broke his ribs, then he broke his ribs and he's not playing.
Well, put padding on your ribs then, because there's nothing you can do. It's a cross check. It's a 2-minute penalty, maybe five. I don't think that was a five, personally.
Well,
you think that was a five?
I don't know if it was a five. I mean, I don't think there's any history of a cross check outside of a cross check to the face being suspendable or, you know, a cross check from behind that puts the guy in a bad
disagree.
Spot.
I'm not defending Mayfield. What I'm saying is that it's a in a vacuum, a play that is certainly talked about. But, like, if they call the rule book, if they call the cross-check, Chris Lee missed that call last night.
Or he saw it and decided not to call it.
Correct.
You know,
however we
which is worse,
it.
Which is way worse.
But that call has to be made, and you make them pay on the power play. That's
they
the rule
missed
book.
That call, but we'll take a break for 2 minutes and get back into it when we get back.
Okay. All right, race coming up in about a half an hour. We missed out on the wheel yesterday, so we will spin the wheel of misfortune, see what we're playing today. We're going to bump that up or back, I guess, to 5:30 today. And Dave Haxtell will be on. I didn't hear his name once connected to Seattle. Like, maybe I'm not, you know, on the inside of the hockey bubble, but I don't remember Dave Haxtell's name coming up a lot.
I don't think the Kraken will be an insider trading a whole bunch in the near future. Well, that thing is on lockdown.
And don't you think, too, that a lot of times where you see, like, everyone's name out there, it's being pumped up by, you know, media members and now that, it's more, they're never, ever in the, it's a smokescreen. You're right. Like, Billy Zito's name in Florida was never once mentioned. All of a sudden, he's hired. Everyone else's name was mentioned.
We'll have to ask Steve Phillips what his policy was, like, leaking info if I catch you, this, that. I bet you he just said, don't be stupid about it. I don't care about a few leaks here and there, but don't be stupid.
Yeah, that's the way I think it used to be. Now it's kind of silence across the board. So Haxtell will join us, though. He's leaving the Leafs bench, and he's off to Seattle. He'll join us at 6. Here is our TSN MLB analyst and Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, we've been talking about the sports world a lot and how these front offices now, and it's not exclusive to one sport. I think it's across the board. It's like a cone of silence. Like, you can't get any information out of anybody. And it feels like it's more of a modern rule that applies to almost every team in every sport. Do you sense that? And what was your policy back when you were running shops in the 90s?
Yeah, so you know, it's interesting. I think it is more restrictive. And I think HIPAA regulations have become more aware. There's more awareness around the HIPAA regulations with regard to injuries, for sure. Although, you know, when the players sign their contract, they do sign away their right when it comes to a baseball-related injury to have that restricted. But anything else, they still have their rights in place. But I got to tell you, as a general manager, leaks drove me crazy. Because I believed that knowledge was power. And I didn't want anybody to know what I was thinking. I didn't want other teams to know. Now, the media, like, I would meet the media every day as the Mets general manager. And there's a talent to be able to answer questions and not say anything. And I that was what I did. I talked to them. I was always available. Nobody could ever complain. I always gave the exact same answer to everybody. So I do the scrum, and if somebody showed up late and they asked me a question, I'd say, well, this is what I told everybody else. And I'd say the same thing. I didn't go off the record. I didn't leak stories. And it drove me crazy when there were leaks out there, to the point that I said, give me the phone bills. I want to see who's chirping. I want to see who's leaking stories. And Bobby Valentine, was, you know, famously a leaker. He would tell people stuff. And so I ended up banning him from going to the winter meetings, because we'd have a meeting, he'd go to the lobby and tell the writers everything we talked about in the meeting. And in the meantime, you know, I'm competing for a player in free agency with another team, and they're reading in the New York newspapers everything that I'm thinking. And so I will tell you that I was always available. I always answered questions, and I would never tip my hand, because I was competing. It's my arena. I don't get to hit or throw or catch, but it's my chance to make a deal. And if I think the best thing for the organization is that other teams, our competition, doesn't know what I'm doing, then I don't want anybody talking about it.
Steve, what the hell do we have on our hands here with the pitchers getting tested for sticky stuff, walking off the mound all geared down? Like, it's just Bobby Manz is in the spotlight again for seemingly the wrong reasons. I mean, how could this have been handled? I think we talked about it on this show, possibly circle back on it at the end of the year and then have an approach. It just seems like a sideshow right now.
So, raising kids, or if you're a teacher and somebody's cheating on a test, do you say to them, you know what, go ahead and finish cheating on this test, but on the next one, don't? And really, that's what the players want. The players aren't surprised by what happened. They knew this was an issue, that there was going to be some end to it when Major League Baseball was investigating and collecting baseballs and trying to gather information. I honestly don't think that there's the problem's the players. I really do believe it. They cheated. They were given an inch, they took a mile. And then everybody gets mad at Rob Manfred. What I don't understand is where is the commissioner's job is, you know, to look after the best interest of baseball. Why is that not the Players Association job too? That, like, the idea that everybody's mad at the guy holding the cheaters accountable instead of being mad at the cheaters, like, we're missing the point. So Max Scherzer, you know, acted like a little kid, assuming the position with his arms outstretched, and then he got worked up about this man. Max Scherzer,
I would have too, Steve. I would have too, right, if that happened to me. So, three times I would have been like, this is a joke.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He's on the executive council of the Players Association. The players cheating is they're cheating against each other. It's player-on-player crime, right? So pitchers are dominating hitters, and they're taking money out of the pockets of the hitters and putting it in their own pocket. Their colleagues within their players' association, they're taking advantage of them. Rob Manfred doesn't talk to many players. He talks to the crusty owners. Tony Clark, the president of the Player Association, he talks to players. If anybody knows about the cheating in the game or steroids in the game or anything else, the guy who's got the best chance of knowing is the guy who runs the Players Association. How do they not ever have an opinion about players cheating when they're cheating each other? There's no accountability, no accepting responsibility, and everybody wants to get mad at Rob Manfred for holding players accountable because they're cheating in a way to gain dominance over others. It's like the steroid era. People want to blame Bud Selig. Bud Selig would have had drug testing in baseball in 1994 before Sosa and McGuire and that whole thing, but the union rejected it. And so the first time he was able to get it instituted after Sosa and McGuire, he got it put in. The whole idea of the Astros, people say the players get mad at Rob Manfred because he let the Astros players get off the hook without punishing them. You know why he did? Because the union said he couldn't punish them. They would not give him access to the players if he was going to punish them. That if he wanted to talk to them, they needed immunity. And you know what he did? He thought, for me to get the story, I need to talk to the players to figure out what went on. If nobody talks to me, I won't be able to resolve this. I need to know. And players get mad at him. How about what? 29 other teams worth of players. Why don't you get mad at your union leadership who actually said, no, you can't punish the Astros? Like, I don't get it. They get mad at Rob Manfred for it. Your union negotiated that position, and Rob Manfred didn't have a choice yet. You get mad at Manfred. It's crazy.
Well, and this isn't going to slow down. I mean, now it's a rule. You know, you can be checked, and you can be checked multiple times, and the opposing manager can call for it, and it's just going to keep happening. And these players, I find it incredibly immature. I mean, we said it yesterday. That Sergio Romo stunt was a joke.
Here's the thing, acting like a
2-year-old.
We think that it's, you know, baseball's grown men playing a kid's game. The reality is, it's a kid's game played by grown men who act like kids. That's what it is. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, here's the thing. Accept it. You put yourself in this position. How about this? Over 70% of pitchers this week have had a decline in their spin rates on their four-seam fastballs. This was pervasive. It went from guys getting a grip on the ball to where they understood spin rate, guys using it for spin rate. And so they're getting mad that they're going to be held accountable. And Clayton Kershaw saying, oh, if a manager challenges us, then you know, there should be a punishment for the manager if he's wrong. So that's like telling your kid, here's your curfew. And then 20 minutes before his curfew, calling him and saying, hey, are you on your way home? And he's like, what are you calling me for? You gave me a curfew. I'll be home for my curfew. And then if he shows up on time, then you should be punished for actually asking him if he was going to be home on time. This is absurd. I mean, the players put themselves in this position. They cheated. And now they're getting mad that they're being held accountable, and they want to control the accountability. It's like, you know, if you don't want to be treated like a kid, don't act like one. And so the parenting that's being handed down, Rob Manfred can't control players' behavior. The players control their behavior. What Rob Manfred can do is he can hold them accountable for their behavior within the rules, and it has to be negotiated with the union. And so the idea that Rob Manfred's the guy who's at fault. Nobody ever points out the union's role in this. Where, why are they, why is it okay to them to let the players cheat? Like, I don't get it.
Well, we'll find out, because again, it's not going to stop anytime soon. We're chatting with Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. So the Jays take two wins out of Miami, and it's not like the Marlins are much of a team, but I think what stood out was it looked like a conventional starter does his job into the bullpen, bullpen does his job. Chatwood, Mesa, Romano, it's not exactly lighter into Ward, into Hanke, but it worked for back-to-back games. And Stripling was really quality a couple of nights ago. Robbie Ray does it again tonight. His strikeout to walk rate is off the charts. He's just not wild anymore, Steve. Like, I don't know what he's done here, but he's not wild anymore. And, I mean, they did what they were supposed to through two games. And most importantly, they did not give up leads, and their bullpen held together. And now they got Baltimore for four starting tonight. You're back to two games above 500. If you can take three out of four, maybe even a sweep, which should be reasonable, you're probably back in the race come Monday morning.
Yeah, they could be absolutely be back in the race. That's what they have to do between now and the All-Star break, is get back into the race. And you're right. Really the last four games, you know, they've come up with a rhythm to the way that they play. You know, good teams have a rhythm. You know, we get good starting pitching. We score early. We beat up on the middle relievers. The bullpen comes in. We win the game. We shake hands at the end of the game. The next time out, we get a quality start. We, you know, and you get that rhythm going. That's where they are right now. And I got to tell you, Robbie Ray looks like a legitimate number two starter. I talked to an American League scout, and he said, like, the Jays deserve a ton of credit because they've done what everybody hoped could be done with Robbie Ray, but nobody could do it, to get him to refine his delivery and his thinking, get him to throw strikes. His walks per nine innings on average is 4.11. Now, last year it was over seven walks per nine innings. This year he's 2.23 walks per nine. He's been excellent and even better of late. And Stripling's been pretty good too. And I still look at, you know, Robbie Ray's pitching like a solid number two. Here's the thing that really is tough to swallow, is that I'm writing about this in my column for tomorrow, but the Jays are going to need a guy like Taijuan Walker, like they got last year at the deadline. They're going to need a guy like that again, who's predictable when you give him the ball. Taijuan Walker acknowledged this week that the only offer he got from any team was from the Mets.
He sat that's around forever.
That's the only offer he got. And he got a two-year deal at $17 million with an option year for $6 million with a $3 million buyout. So if it's a two-year deal, it's 2 times 10. If it's a three-year deal, it's 3 times 7.66. And the biggest concern the Jays had was his performance against left-handed hitters. And it wasn't great, but he is so much better this year. He's using his two-seam fastball. He's dominating left-handers this year. He's been great for the Mets. And, man, he could have really helped that rotation at a very reasonable price.
Well, he's not available anymore for the Jays, so obviously we'll have to see what they do between now and the end of next month. But what have you seen out of Springer through the first two outings? He still doesn't, you know, have a hit, but he looks healthy. I mean, that's, I guess, what I've been waiting for, is to hear about some sort of setback or some sort of an issue. To me, it looks like he's rehabbed appropriately. He won't stay in the five hole for long. You know, maybe by the end of the weekend he's moving up, but health, I think, was the priority, especially with two wins against a team like Miami. What do you make of Springer through two games?
Yeah, completely agree. He hit the ground ball that Jesus Aguilar, the first baseman, dove for, and they got him out at first, but he had to leg it out. He was racing the pitcher to the base, and that, to me, was the most telling play, because about 10 days earlier, I saw a video of him running in the outfield, and I thought, man, he's short striding. He's protecting his quad. He doesn't look like, to get talking about he's close, I'm thinking he's not close, but he looked like he ran at full stride without hesitation, without holding up, finished. And, you know, a lot of times deceleration can be a problem when you've had a leg injury, and that wasn't an issue for him at all either. And he went into the dugout smiling, and I agree. I think that you know, knock on wood, keep their fingers crossed, they probably got this leg thing behind them for the year. Because, you know, I was concerned they were going to rush him, but this time they took their time. They did the right thing. Yeah, okay, so he missed 70 games. I mean, you know, if they had been more conservative early, he might have missed 40 games. And so it cost him a bit. But he does look ready to go right now, and that's just another guy. Boy, their lineup, and I'm writing about that too, their approach at the plate, their ability to hit the ball from line to line. You know, in the game yesterday, I think it was Teoscar Hernandez and Bichette both hit liners down the right field line into the corner. And just, you know, quality approaches at the plate. Really, really good job. And their hitting coach deserves a ton of credit.
Great stuff, buddy. As always, we look forward to the article up on TSN.ca, and we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay, you bet. Thanks, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Writing columns,
doing
hits. Got everything on the go, man.
He makes a great point about, you know, you want to do these things, and then all of a sudden the Players Association steps in. You know, it's always been it's a fine line, right? You want to implement rules. You want to, you know, even in hockey, a guy gets a suspension. Well, the PA's involved. Well, they're protecting both players, the guy
exactly.
who did it and the guy who got hurt, like, you know, or the guy who is the victim of it. Like, it's there's so many rules. Maybe Manfred does want to do a bunch of things, but he can't because his hands are tied.
It's got to be collectively bargained, right? And the union's never going to give that up, ever. Why would they? Why would you allow the other side to have any power? Like, these two sides, they work together. There's cohesion. They should have the same end goal. Like, let's make the most money as possible, and let's make sure everything works well, and the growing of the game and the brand and the integrity and the protection. But you give an inch, they might try to run a mile, and neither side ever wants to do that. But there could be some reckoning, you know, upon us here, where the CBA in baseball is going to expire at the end of this year. So it is going to be a dicey winter. It could be dicey. I hope they don't lead to a work stoppage, but it wouldn't be shocking. It does feel like there's a lot of animosity between both sides, and they got to iron a lot of stuff out, for sure. Hour two coming up. Ray will join us just after 5 o'clock. We'll spin the wheel of misfortune. We did not do that yesterday, so we'll do that at 5:30 today. Dave Haxtell coming up. Crazy finish in the NBA game last night. And the Travelers, I wouldn't say it's a leaderboard chalked of top 10 players in the world.
And I'll get to a comment exchanged today that was egregious and outrageous.
Okay, a two-pack. I like it. I look forward to hearing what that comment was. And maybe there was some sort of an explanation for it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, so we were just pumping the tires of George Springer and how he looks, and he's healthy, and he's back, and they've rehabbed. Yeah. They've done it. It's over. He's out tonight. He's not playing. Day off. Comes back for two games, day off. But this is ultimately a part of the plan. It's about easing him back in. It's about making sure he does not re-aggravate something. But is this going to? How long do you go with this plan where he's missed that many games? You know, you can't DH him tonight. You're back in the American League. Can't
I
DH
would say
him?
It would be comparable to what? Not comparable. It would reflect where they are in the standings, to be honest with you. If they kind of start sinking a little bit, I would bet you'd see a whole lot more of it.
What was the term that we used through the whole Raptors run with Kawhi? What was it called again when he would take
load management?
Load management.
Yep.
So Springer's on the load management situation.
That's right.
Now.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Right.
You're right. That's what it is. It's load management.
Like which that, in baseball is odd because they play 162.
Right. But I mean we haven't brought that term up for the longest time, whether it just became accepted. Because we saw NBA, a lot of players take nights off, or it's just been out of sight, out of mind for me anyways. I haven't heard that term since Kawhi was here.
Yeah, it's been kind of out of the lexicon for a while now. Maybe pinch hits tonight. I would assume if he's off tonight, he'll play the other three games of the weekend. And you're playing Baltimore, right? Like with or without Springer. The offense has been very good without him. You should still be able to win these games without him against Baltimore, and I'm sure this was a plan that they put in place weeks ago when he was still rehabbing. You know, when you come back, you start the minors, you come up, well, easy in, you play a couple of games, night off. It's not the end of the world. It's just you want to see this guy play.
Right.
You want to see him play, and I got to believe he's chomping at the bit to play as well, but clearly he's fine with the plan. You know, he's probably in lockstep with the plan. So Springer will not go tonight. Joe Panik will play first tonight. Vladdy will DH. Vladdy's been getting tested at first, man. They've been making him move, and he's been flexing at first.
Dude,
I've been impressed
been
with him.
He's been doing the Pete Peter splits a lot.
Yeah,
he's looked good.
Been. Crazy is a lot of times, not a lot, but I just, like, if it's a crazy kind of Derek Jeter play, but just rudimentary plays where you're like.
Routine.
Like
routine.
Standard ground ball to Bichette, and all of a sudden Vladdy is doing Van Damme on the two trucks on the highway.
He is.
It's okay. Just like, that is a routine in the bigs.
Yeah.
Vladdy. Stop putting him Van Damme on the highway.
Yeah.
I know.
Vladdy Van Damme. I love that. All right, race so coming funny. Up. The Wheel of Misfortune at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.